You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
All roads lead to the Purple Project Podcast.
Triple P is all about the happenings across Kansas State Athletics in Manhattan, Kansas.
Football, basketball, and everything else in between. K-State is ready to compete with top teams among the Big 12 Conference.
The kickoff of the Purple Project Podcast starts right now. Here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
Presented by the Rally in the Valley, coming up in a couple weeks, August 6th. This is the Purple Project Podcast. Eddie Greer, your host of this weekly edition of the podcast. Welcome on board as this podcast covers all things K-State Athletics here in Manhattan, Kansas. Recording on this late Friday night, July 15th, 2022. Man, July is flying by. The summer is also flying by as well. I bring on my co-host in just a moment here. Of course, the Pearl Project Podcast. Find it wherever you get your podcast. If you're new to the show, welcome on board to it. Make sure you hit that subscribe button and make sure you hit that alarm button too. Every time we upload content, either a daily or weekly podcast, you're up to date on that as well. We're on Spotify, iTunes, let's see here, Odyssey, and a few more podcasting platforms as well. Episode 109. Can you believe it? But I sure can't already, as we're about to get right on down to business right away, folks. And we got an announcement. Well, I have an announcement to make at the end of the show regarding possible addition to the podcast. So we'll see what happens with that. But for now, time I'll bring on my co-host, usually for the weekly edition of the Pearl Project Podcast, out there in San Diego, none other than Alex Aiden. Alex, what's happening out there?
Not too much, Eddie. We are a tenth. Well, not quite. Next week, we will be a tenth of the way to 200 episodes. Wow. How about that? A tenth of the way.
Already counting down.
We're already counting down. Only 89 more until we're celebrating episode 200 of the Purple Project Podcast, as we talk about, as we'll probably be talking, because that'll be probably in like a year and a half from now. So we'll probably be talking about Will Howard down the stretch with the 2023 team, debating whether or not we can put Avery in or roll with Will.
That's probably accurate. It's going to happen.
I already pulled the topic away. By the way, Big 12 Media Days were this week for football. And I just want to say, I heard a lot of talk from Chris Klein about how Will Howard's going to play a lot of football in college, and how he's the K-State Wildcat through and through, and how much they love Will Howard, and how Adrian Martinez is that perfect transfer because they really just wanted a bridge cap quarterback to possibly get to Will Howard next year. So I think we're going to see, as we talked about in the quarterbacks episode, I think we're going to see more Will Howard at Kansas State. We got Adrian Martinez this year, but I think we're going to see more Will Howard at Kansas State. I really, really get that hunch. The coach love Will Howard. I mean, they think he's got a lot of room to grow, Eddie. So we'll see what happens there. But it was Big 12 media days for football here Wednesday, Thursday. And really interesting to hear a lot of the quotes, Eddie, that came out of there. Ranging from quotes from Brett Yormark, the new Big 12 commissioner, to quotes from Gene, to Coach Kleiman, as well as the players that were all down there, Adrian Martinez there, Eli Huggins, Deuce and Dino Green. There we go. Those are the four down there. All of them. I knew them all. The names were coming on up. But they all represent K-State tremendously well. Just class acts, really represented the university well. Good to see that. A lot of good information came out of there. I think we got a lot of nuggets for the football team from that, because we hadn't heard from anybody for a while about where this team kind of stood and where things were. So we kind of learned a little bit about some defensive schemes and some players they were really liking, and some different things that they were looking at. We were able to get some outside views from others kind of what their thoughts were on Kansas State, and we're able to hear from Gene about how some of the capital improvement projects were going, as well as kind of future plans for possible renovations, or lack thereof, I should say, because he's actually thinks he'll probably put pause on it for a while. And then realignment. Obviously, realignment was a huge topic down there, Big 12 media days as well. I heard Gene talk about it, Brett Yormark talk about it, a lot of talk about that as well. So some good nuggets that came out of there, Eddie. It was nice. It was good timing for it. And now the Big 12 media days is behind us. It's really just kind of a mad sprint here before we get to fall practice and that first game against South Dakota.
Yeah, yes, sir. Yes, it is. Definitely now that's in the books. And I did a daily early this morning. That's, well, posted this morning anyways. For those of you who missed out on that, definitely download and check it out on our favorite Football Friday segment of this podcast. So definitely check that out as well. Yeah, I did not catch Gene Taylor's quotes there at all, so I'm going to have to go back and look at that as well. But yeah, Brett, you know, I really wanted to really hear what the new commish, Brett Yormark, yes, wanted to say as well. And he already has a plan in place. He's going to be ready to go August 1st. That's where his job starts. So he said it's Big 12.
Quote unquote job starts. But I think we all know that his job started the day that USC and UCLA announced they were going to the Big Ten.
Yeah, pretty much there. When USC and UCLA put the bombshell on the Pac-12, saying, hey, we out. Peace out. We're going to another conference, and leaving the Pac-12 in a hole, and really continuing this domino effect of possibly seeing this. I've been hearing a lot of talks and reading, educating myself on this realignment thing about super conferences, folks. And SEC already has, 14 teams already still? And they're going to, obviously, with the OU Texas edition coming up in the next couple of years there. Obviously, we got our teams, the foursome, coming in here next year. I believe that's right, if I read that correctly.
You were correct, 2023.
Yeah. I thought it was 2024, but I read an article in The Athletic there and refresh my brain a little bit, and it's going to be next year. I cannot believe it. But we still got a lot of football left to play here. We haven't had a first snap yet here in 2022 yet. But yeah, UCF, for those of you who've been not paying attention, K-State Nation, or just been too busy with summer vacation, yeah, UCF, Houston, Cincinnati, and BYU will be coming to this conference, the Big 12, next year, making it 12 teams.
Well, yeah, temporarily 14.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, with Oklahoma and Texas supposed to be staying another year from what I read and what I've watched, YouTube videos and things like that. So, and I thought also interesting with Big 12 Media Days, right? Day two, having listening to the PowerCat podcast, Tim Fitzgerald and the boys. Oklahoma, Texas had the same day.
So. Yeah, they did.
Oh, yeah. So there's never been a lot happens. Of. Yep. So that's been a lot of grumblings about that, as well, a lot of tension, if you will, there. But yeah, K-State. As I do two things at the same time here. Let's see. Yeah, we're gonna be here pretty soon. Here, we're gonna be coming up on August. Pretty soon here, in a couple of weeks here, and then that's not what I was looking for. And then, Alex, you put it well put there with a mad dash to the kickoff here at Bill Snyder Family Stadium, which is at the recording of this podcast, 49 days until kickoff, folks. So yeah, it's gonna be here for you know it. And I know there's been a lot of attention, as I talked about this in the Football Friday edition of the podcast, which came out earlier today. I'm going to say it then, I'm going to say it here as well. I mean, there's a lot of promise for the future already with what has transpired over the last couple weeks with K-State recruiting and all this realignment stuff. There's unfinished business here in 2022, especially with this K-State football team as well. So all the attention on that, we got to turn our attention to the present. and when it matters. And K-State has a good opportunity to have a big season or to not live up to expectations. We talked about that a lot on this podcast. So, yep, definitely. Yeah, that's interesting. You brought up Will Howard again on the Cruel P podcast there.
Well, he was just mentioned so many times at Big 12 Media Days, and I'm like, I've never heard a backup quarterback talk about this much. At a Big 12 Media Day. I never hear a backup quarterback talk to that like that.
Well, I'm gonna sit back and wait and see, because I'm not going down to Avenue tonight. I'm really not. But Will Howard, easy at least for right now. They talk about him like he's gonna start.
I heard more talk about Will Howard than Adrian Martinez, it felt like.
And speaking of Adrian Martinez there, I know we're bouncing around a little bit, but hey, this is the Pearl Project podcast, baby. Adrian Martinez and Tim Fitzgerald brought it up in his podcast there about Nebraska fans being salty. I don't think I'm pretty sure we talked about this a little bit, but not often. But Adrian Martinez did speak to the media, and he was asked a question about Nebraska, and did he regret leaving Nebraska there as well? And he said, "I hope I didn't burn any bridges," quote unquote. Trying to summarize, what he said there as well. So, Nebraska fans wanting Adrian Martinez, for this is my point of view, anyways, to fail coming over here to Manhattan, it seems like, and they have their own issues. That's a whole nother episode. I can dive on in that, but. Yeah, I thought that Adrian Martinez kind of felt like he had some regret leaving Nebraska there. Obviously, the ceiling is high. We'll just put it like that for him, obviously. But we do know the not-so-good Adrian Martinez turned the football over. That's one thing for me, and I might be jumping to go in a future episode of the podcast, is what I'm going to be paying attention to. Is can Adrian Martinez not turn the football over? And that's going to be the big thing, man.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. Stay healthy.
Yep, stay healthy. He's injury-prone. He's been injured a little bit and recovering from an injury this past year, this final year with Nebraska, obviously, and all those one-possession games lost by Nebraska. So you got to wonder, obviously Adrian came in here with a mindset that he wants to win football games. You got the weapons. Obviously, we'll get the wide receivers here in just a second. He's going to have a lot to choose from. Malik Knowles, Phillip Brooks, Cade Warner, fellow Nebraska transfer as well. Right. So, yeah, that's a big question
one
there.
One of many.
Yeah, one of many, and that's going to be a future episode of the podcast. Well, burning questions at the end of the season, and might have just gave mine one away a little bit. But, yeah, that's the question around here in Manhattan is, which Adrian Martinez will we get, Alex?
That's a million-dollar question. That is, I really think that's the million-dollar question. And really, what K-State's success here in 2022 really hinges on. It's not the only thing.
Yeah.
I think you look, and there's big, we've talked about this. There's questions of safety. You're going to be starting a whole new group of safeties. That's a question. The depth, that's a question mark. If you have injuries, are you able to absorb the attrition of that? And then Adrian Martinez. Those are really the question marks, Eddie, in my opinion. And offensively, I really feel like that is the one biggest thing, because we talked about it. And we'll talk about it here. More today, we get more into the wide receivers. You look at the team, offensive line. I think for the most part, you know what you're going to get there. You're going to have a good offensive line. Running back, yeah, there's questions behind Deuce. There's no doubt about that. I was talked about it in 12 media days, but you've got Deuce, so that's big. And then you've got Jackson Eade there to help pave the way as well. And then a receiver, you've got some guys. You've got some guys who can make some plays. And so you look around, Eddie, there's playmakers on the offense. You got a good offensive line. It really comes down to, I think, the offense. And Colin Klein, his system, how Adrian Martinez fits in the system, which I think he'll fit fine. And can Adrian Martinez, can he cut down on turnovers? Can he stay healthy? He played last year with a broken jaw, Eddie. I mean, he played part of the year with a broken jaw. And, you know, again, you can't prevent getting clocked in the face when you're playing football.
Right.
But he's a dude that he sustained some injuries. He's tough as nails, by the way. He played through that. And so I think that's a good thing. Listening to him speak, Eddie, he's got his head screwed on straight. He's got the right mentality. He doesn't blame receivers or the horrible offensive line that he had in Nebraska, because their offensive line was a joke, Eddie. I'm just going to call it what it is. It was a complete and utter joke, the offensive line in Nebraska. And that's why he got hurt so much. He's not going to have that. But you never heard him blaming necessarily the Nebraska offensive line publicly anyway, or blaming receivers for dropping balls, or blaming players for not making plays in close games. I mean, he took ownership of those mistakes, and he's been very vocal at Kansas State that he needs to improve in that area. That's an area that he's looking to improve, and he's working hard to improve in it. And when you look at what he did in Nebraska, he broke a ton of records. He could throw the ball. He could run the ball. We know he can do those things. The questions are, can he cut down on the turnovers? Can he cut down on the little inconsistencies, the little inaccuracies, things like that? And if he can, then I think K-State's offense is at a really good place, I should say. If he can't, then it gets a little hairy. And at that point, Who knows at that point? But I think that's the million-dollar question, really, on the offensive side at least, is Adrian Martinez. Who are you going to get at quarterback? I'm optimistic that they're going to get Adrian Martinez that is able to, at the very least, manage the football game. I don't expect him to necessarily light the world on fire, but I expect him to do a nice job at quarterback. And, you know, so optimistic for that, but... there's a question. There's a question mark. But I think people do forget Eddie a lot. Adrian Martinez, I think this is part of why he left Nebraska. There's this rap about him just being just like this. Just like it's all his fault. Like, look at all these mistakes. Look at this, look at that. He shattered, like, every Nebraska record, Eddie. Like, you don't just set records like that if you suck. Like, I'm sorry. you just don't. And I understand Nebraska fans they got a way about themselves. They got a special way about themselves. I'm fully aware of that. They're an interesting brand. Look, I can say that my mom went to Nebraska, so I can say that.
I didn't know that.
Well, you know, my mom actually she went to K-State too. She went to both. She was a K-State and Nebraska fan.
Okay,
both.
Okay.
When Nebraska went to the Big Ten, she disowned Nebraska. She did. She disowned them. She said that she felt like they sold out for the money. That's kind of how she felt. And she was all in on K-State. It's been all in on K-State since then. And then I went to college there. She really didn't have a choice after that, you know. And your kid goes to school there. And, you know, your husband went to school there. And you went to school there. And you kind of have to. But she loves K-State. She loves K-State through and through. But she spent 2 years in Lincoln. So I can take shots at Nebraska and have the cover of saying I had a family over there. So I'm allowed to. But no, they're an interesting brand. And as you mentioned it, I get the same feeling, like, screw Adrian Martinez. We're high and mighty Nebraska. It's kind of like KU, right? Oh, we're high and mighty KU. No, we're high and mighty Nebraska. Like, why would you leave us for those peasants? Like, those peasants down in Manhattan. Like, just go fail. Like, just go fail. Look, this is the best team he's played on. Get over it. You know? It's not like you've been lighting the world on fire. Look at your football team. Last time you played in a bowl game was 6 years ago. Like, my gosh. Like, are we living in the 80s? Or are we living in 2022? Like, I'm sorry. I mean, what time frame are we living in? Just snap into reality, Nebraska fans. He's a good quarterback. He broke all the records. Like, you know, so it kind of bugs me. Some people are just like, oh, like, what are you going to get? And that is a huge question. What are you going to get? But some people act like, oh, he's just horrible. He just sucked in Nebraska. No. And he also had a joke of an offensive line. Like, a joke. I mean, it was the worst, literally statistically, Eddie. I'm not even kidding. Statistically, that was the worst offensive line in Power 5 football last year. I mean, it was a joke. It was an utter joke. I mean, he was standing behind paper. So, I mean, what do you want him to do? So that's not going to be the case this year. So moral of the story, I'm cautiously optimistic, but that is the million-dollar question.
Man, yeah. So.
Well, it's just the truth. Offensive line is horrible.
I'm not gonna disagree on any of that. That is for sure. So Alex, let it loose. Eddie,
what can you say? I'm bringing the fire tonight.
Yes, you are, Alex. Bring it here on the Pro Project Podcast, episode 109 on the weekly edition. Yeah. So that's gonna be the big question. I'm sure we'll have more to discuss on the other questions.
Eddie, doesn't it get a little annoying to you to every day get on Twitter and hear Nebraska fans saying something else about Adrian Martinez or jumping on like a podcast and hearing some Nebraska personality saying something? Like, doesn't it get old? I mean, it gets a little old every day.
Yeah, after a while, yeah, I definitely agree. It gets really annoying after a while there, and you want to tell those Nebraska fans shut up and do something else.
I want to see former K-State players succeed at the spots that they go after K-State.
Right,
I can't speak for others, but I do.
Yeah, that's for sure. But yeah, we do have the quarterbacks episode already up there in our feed, the Pro Project Podcast there, part one and two there. Last week we talked about Deuce. Alex mentioned him already there on his podcast. And we'll probably mention him again because he was one of the leading receivers last year for K-State, and this is the wide receiver edition. This will be taking a swerve into the wide receivers there, coming off that Nebraska rant there a little bit there. Since the Power Project podcast came about, wide receivers has been really, in my opinion, number one group for K-State. Going back to Chris Klieman's first year at K-State, So losing, and I mentioned, I think either it was last week or the week before, Sebastian Taylor not on the roster for K-State. That's a veteran receiver there that you're losing, and at some point or another, too, Sebastian Taylor was high as well, the wide receiver as well, trying to do big things as well. His mark was too inconsistent there, even though he did make some plays for K-State, don't get me wrong, but obviously he's a little bit inconsistent. I don't know, obviously when we read the report, we don't know why he decided not to come back to K-State, however, he would have been the fourth senior coming back for this wide receiver group, but you have other seniors as well. That includes their leading receiver for K-State last year, who was 18th in the Big 12. That's Phillip Brooks last year. 43 catches for 543 yards and two touchdowns. And then you might as well call this guy we already know he can do it all. Obviously, Deuce Vaughn was second on the team. Last year, he led the team in receiving yards as well. 49 catches for Deuce. 468 yards, four touchdowns there, and then your third leading receiver there is Malik Knowles there. And oh, by the way, Deuce Vaughn was 23rd in the Big 12 in catches there, and then Malik Knowles round out the top 25, just got in there a little bit. 29 catches last year for 441 yards and four touchdowns. Had two touchdowns in the Texas Bowl earlier this year against LSU, the win against LSU there. And a lot of people, including us on this podcast, expect him again for the third year in a row on this podcast, Pro Project Podcast, to have some big effect. I mean, we know we can do it in the return game, and that's going to be the special teams episode down the road in the Pro Project Podcast. But focusing on the receiving side right now, tonight, once again, as we're sitting here talking about Malik Knowles, and hopefully that momentum he can have a breakout. This is his last chance to do that in Colin Klein's offense. We saw a little bit what he can do in this offense in the Texas Bowl. So hopefully it's this year, finally, Malik Knowles can put it all together. I want to focus on these three guys. Well, we talked about Deuce a lot. Well, we'll talk about him here, I guess. Phillip Brooks, he's kind of been put in the back burner a little bit. Obviously, Brooks and Knowles are part of that special teams unit, which we'll get into later on as we approach kickoff of the first game for K-State. That's down the road down there. So yeah, Phillip Brooks, Knowles, and Deuce Vaughn. And I'll go ahead and throw the other senior in here, Cade Warner. 14 catches last year for only 166 yards. He has yet to touch pay dirt for K-State. So all that, I thought Cade Warner last year became that reliable third down wide receiver for Skylar Thompson when they needed a big play there, especially towards the latter half of the season. I thought they really relied on Cade to make tough catches, and he did that. So I wonder in this offense now, Con Klein wanted to spread the ball around. He did that. 10 different K-State receivers, Alex, had a catch against LSU back in January there. Phillip Brooks led the way there with 5 catches for 69 yards in that. So that's a big sample size of what we're going to see. And that's not even including tight ends, because that's going to be a separate episode with the offensive linemen next week on the Pro Project Podcast. That doesn't even include a couple of the tight ends and some of the fullbacks who made a catch or two in that ball game there. But what are your thoughts here a little bit on Knowles and Brooks and Warner?
Yeah, you know, I think that, well, first off, quickly going back, you mentioned, you know, Deuce Vaughn's probably part of this conversation too, because he led the team in receptions last year. And Deuce at Big 12 Media Days on Wednesday was literally saying, you know, I've tried to, you know, add a little bit more weight, try to get a little bit stronger, a little sturdier, and just try to get a little more versatile in the game and in his game. And Deuce just said, you know, he wants to be that back that if you got, you know, a team that's rushing 3, dropping 8, that Adrian knows that he can dump it off to Deuce, and Deuce can make people miss, and he can get yards. And, like, that's something that he wants to really continue to work on refining and growing in his game is really the passing game and being versatile out of the backfield in the passing game. And so I think that's something we're going to see be a big focal point of this team this year, Eddie. You know, I think Deuce is still going to do what he does in between the tackles, but I think you might even see a little bit. You might see some more things with Deuce in the passing game. Maybe some different more looks there, and just some more dump offs. Some more maybe some you know, some screens for him, some design passes for him. I just think that's going to be something based on what he said, based on some things we've also heard from Colin Klein too, and Coach Kleiman. I just think that is something that could happen, especially since it's something that he was working on a lot this offseason. So I think that will be a big part of the passing game. So I'm glad that you brought that up. And with the three, I think you mentioned the top three guys. I mean, those are the three that I really view as the top three. I understand that, you know, Cade Warner only had like 160 some yards last year, but I think he's the number three guy. When you listen to his coaching staff talk, those are the three, Eddie. Those are the three that I hear come up more than any other receivers, pretty heavily. And for the most part, it seems like those are the three that are brought up by any coach when talking about that K-State offense. I think that tells you all you need to know where their heads are right now. Those are the three that they view as the top three guys. There are, you know, we've talked about some others that could potentially pop in that breakout years behind him. And I absolutely think a guy like RJ Garcia could, you know, guys like him could pop and have big years. Wouldn't surprise me at all. I think a lot of guys would get touches for K-State at different times this year. But when you're looking at it as a whole, I think that those are the three guys that are going to be the most consistent, the most consistently targeted receivers in this offense. And again, I think the ball will be spread around. But those three, and you sprinkle Deuce in, I think those would probably be your top four targets. And so, you know, I think that they all bring something different to the table. I think that's also part of it. They kind of complement each other well. You mentioned it with Cade Warner. I think that he's reliable third down guy. You know, we saw him make some catches and some big moments. You know, he didn't have a ton of yards, but it felt like all of his catches, Eddie, were big catches. Catches that were coming at big times in the game. They weren't garbage time catches or, you know, and just rack up a bunch of yards in the first quarter, and then you know you don't hear from him again. No, you mentioned it. I remember him making some big catches and some crucial moments, and really showing some reliable hands in those situations. And then I also remember him, you know, having some moments in the Texas Bowl. So I think that his game's good. He's going to take his game to the next level. And look, old Nebraska to Nebraska connection again going on. Can't hurt anything. So I do think we'll see some more from Cade Warner. And I think that the offensive change will help him. I think it'll help all the receivers. I should make that clear. I think it will help the ball. But I do think it'll help Cade Warner. You know, when it comes to Phillip Brooks, look, he's the do-it-all guy. He's your glue guy. He's your do-it-all guy. He can beat a team deep. He can beat him underneath. He can beat him on third down. He can move around to some different roles. He's kind of a Swiss Army knife, Eddie. You can do really anything that you need to do with Phillip Brooks, and I think that he is the most valuable of the three receivers. I think Malik Knowles is going to be your top. And actually, I take that back. I think Phillip Brooks will be the top receiver. When the season's over, we're looking to say who had the most catches this year? Phillip Brooks. Who had the most targets this year? Phillip Brooks. That's what I expect. Yards, if Malik stays healthy, I could maybe see Malik there because I think he's going to be a home run threat, a big play threat. But Phillip Brooks, in my opinion, is going to be the glue guy, the Swiss Army knife guy, the guy that they're...
Interesting. I like it.
Yeah, they move him all over the field, right? They'll line up in different spots, you know, and maybe they will try to beat someone deep with him because he's got the speed. Maybe, we know how good he is at some of those underneath routes. Trying to get him the ball in open space and let him use some of that speed, some of that quickness, and some of that shiftiness that he has. I think that those are some of the things that they're going to do with him. And look, he's proven. He went out last year and showed, like, you know, I can do this in Courtney Messingham's offense. So if he can do it in Courtney Messingham's offense, we'll see what he can do in Colin Klein's offense. But he was their top guy last year. I think that he will be the most targeted guy again. And I think I kind of view him as kind of like the safety blanket, right? You know, he's kind of going to be that safety blanket for Adrian Martinez. You know, play breaks down, things go wrong, you turn to Phillip, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's a big play. We mentioned Cade Warner, it's a big play, but it's a 3rd and 8. Run a crosser to Phillip. See if he can, you know, get you 10 yards on a 3rd and 8. I see him in a lot of those roles and see if he can break something up 50, 60 yards. I just see him in that role. I have a lot of confidence in Phillip Brooks, more confidence in him than any of the other receivers. And I honestly, that goes back to last year. Last year I said the same thing. I thought he was underrated. I don't think he's underrated now for what he did last year, but I do think that he gets overshadowed sometimes by Malik Knowles because Malik Knowles kind of has that has a higher ceiling, has more of the home run threat, and so Malik with Phillip Brooks, you know what you're going to get for the most part. You're going to get a really good, reliable receiver who can be a good possession receiver, someone who also can beat you to speed and do some things in the open field. And then Malik, you just mentioned a home run hitter. I view him as he's going to be the home run hitter, the home run threat, the guy who can take the top off. And I think that he, like Cade Warner, could benefit greatly from this change in philosophy with the offense. He had a good ending to his season. And I think that hopefully that will help, help him carry it over into the offseason. Hopefully he's healthy, feeling good physically. He's feeling good physically. Then I think he's in a good place. Just hope that he can hold on to football. We saw him drop some balls last year. definitely would like to see him hold on to some more footballs. That has me a little weary as well. His injuries, his hands. Have me a little weary, but I do think that he's got the highest ceiling. I think he's got the highest ceiling, and if he can pop and he can hit, he absolutely can just be a beast. Just can be a beast out there on the field. And so he's the biggest wild card, but he's also got the highest upside. So it's going to be interesting to see him. In fact, you know, we talked about the offense, how Adrian Martinez was really the biggest question on offense. For me, number two is Malik Knowles. That really is. What are you going to get from him? I know when Keithan put us on the spot, I picked him as the breakout player. I picked him because of the ceiling. Because he's got that ceiling. And if he's ever going to break through and hit that potential, it's going to be now. It's going to be now or never. You know, well, first off, you won't be back in K-State. So, I mean, that's the
first part of that.
But more than that, if you get healthy and you have a coaching change to a new scheme, Colin Klein, it's more pass-friendly, and you still can't get it, like, I don't think you'd ever were going to get it. So I think that this is really, you know, this is it. You know, this is it for him. And if he can't excel this year, I just don't think he would ever, to be 100% honest. So. But I do think he's got that ceiling, and if he can break through it, and really build on what he did his freshman year, because we remember him at his freshman year. Ooh, he was good, and you were looking at him thinking, oh man, this guy could be something else. And
yeah, second half of that freshman year.
Exactly, and those last couple of years just did not live up to that hype. So. The next 3 years, because he was redshirted, then it was there 3 years. So, you know, we'll see. You know, we'll see with him. But all in all, I feel pretty comfortable with the receiving core. And like I said, you know, there's some guys, you know, behind those three that I think could pop. With Garcia probably near the top of that list for me. And then, like I said, I think they'll use the running backs as well in some ways. I think they'll use Sammy Reeler. I think they'll use him as well. I know that we'll talk about more next week. But, Chris Kleiman did say, that part of the reason they didn't go out and get a transfer tight end is because they have confidence in Sammy Reeler. I mean, he's made a ton of growth, and they're really happy with where he's at and what he can do in the passing game. So it sounds like he's made strides in that area of this game, and enough where they felt like they didn't need to go get a transfer tight end, which is something that they've done the last couple of years. So it'll be interesting to see the way that they incorporate that in there as well. But I think you'll also see some tight end, some tight end passes, and even some fullback passes for Archnickel then.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Keelan did say a couple weeks ago on his podcast that he... for his breakout player, did pick, sticking with the receiver side, Keenan Garber. There was a lot of talk about him before he came. Before he came, and that's kind of, I would put him right up there with RJ Garcia 100%. As well. You look for him to do some things in his offense as well. Last year, Garcia only had a catch for 6 yards. I believe that catch came against KU. If my memory is correct on that, he only played.
Someone's got to play in the garbage time, Eddie.
He only played in three games last year, RJ, and there's been a lot of hype around him. Whenever I read something about the receiving group, RJ's name pops up. So hopefully he can get on the field more, and we can see some more of that potential down the road. Keenan Garber with that speed. Yeah, I want to know what they're going to do with him.
Let's not forget about the transfer either from Ole Miss.
JJ, y'all just get into that. Jackson. Ole Miss, see how they're going to fit him in this offense. Junior, Alex just mentioned it, Ole Miss transfer, Jane Jackson. I think I picked him as a possible breakout. I think I did. I'm not 100% sure.
You did, and I could 100% see it because he's a guy that, coming out of high school, is a guy that was really highly regarded. And if you look at K-State's receivers, again, kind of like Malik Knowles, if you look at the receivers and just look at raw ability, he's got as much raw ability as anyone on that roster.
Yeah.
So if he can put it together, no one's talking about him right now because we haven't seen him play with K-State, so we need to see him play first. But if he plays and he hits or something clicks, then we're changing the tone of, we're changing that complete tone again of this offense and what it could be.
Yep, man. Yeah, you hit the nail right on the head. We haven't seen him play yet. We're going to have to wait until September to hopefully see him play here at Bill Steiner Family Stadium in Manhattan, Kansas there. But, yeah, if he steps on the field and impresses the coaches, whew, that's another weapon there for the Asian.
He's kind of like Tyrone Howell coming in last year. Remember where there was unknown about Tyrone Howell?
Yeah, last year.
I kind of feel similar to him. It feel like this is a similar situation. We had no idea what we really had. We knew there was a lot of upside, but we just didn't know. He turned out to be a pretty good player. He ended up transferring because K-State didn't use him, right? Surprise, Courtney Messingham. But I kind of view it as a similar situation.
Yeah. So, and then there's a fresh redshirt freshman was on that depth chart as well. Lloyd Xavier, a freshman. He was like third or fourth on the depth chart back there as well. So, yeah, I mean, this receiving group, again, has a lot of potential yet again. But I don't want to, fast forward to the end of the year. You're going to lose these guys. Yeah, you mentioned Knowles. This is the last chance for him to really show what he's got right there. Phillip Brooks, yeah, I could definitely see that. Him being that reliable target for Adrian Martinez, and that I like the whole Swiss Army knife analogy that you put on there for sure. When I looked at the stats there, I'm like, oh man, I forgot. You know, Phillip Brooks was used quite a bit of pass last year there. So,
it kind of flies under the radar. Flies under the radar, man.
Mm-hmm, yep, for sure. So, you know, you're gonna get what you're gonna out of him. You already know what you're gonna out of 22 Deuce Vaughn. So, yeah, I feel pretty good about receiving core, like you, for sure. So, I mean, we'll see for sure. Yeah, I like Brooks, Knowles, Cade Warner in there. You know what you can get from Deuce. We'll talk about the tight ends next week. Sammy Wheeler, I really like Sammy Wheeler. He's made some big plays, but he's always gotten hurt. So, if he can stay healthy again, the question is healthy, like Adrian Martinez. Can he stay on the football field? That's the other question mark for him, because every time he makes big plays or seems to get in the rhythm, he gets hurt out for the season or something like that. So
It feels that way. And I'll say this: it'll be interesting to see. But you know, we talk about all those top three receivers. Look, this is it. This is it for all of them. This is it for Kay. This is it for Phillip. This is it for Malik. This is it for Sammy. If you want to throw Sammy in there too, I mean, this is it. This is their last go round. They're all done after this year. So, you know, I think that also is going to be a factor. Like, this is it. Like, this is our last ride, you know. And I just think that could also just kind of light a little bit of an extra fire, give a little bit of extra motivational nudge to them to really just, you know, when you're in practice, right, Eddie, and it's, you know, you're doing the two-a-days. I know they don't do two-a-days anymore, but you're doing the two-a-days that,
That's old school, baby.
It's old school, baby. But, you know, you do that. You do that extra couple reps, right? Because you just got that little nudge. And those extra couple reps, right, they make that difference in November and December. I just, you know, as seniors, I can just see them. They all seem like guys who just would really kind of have that little extra nudge with it being their last go-round really their last opportunity. To kind of go big or go home here with K-State, and, you know, obviously with them being a Big 12 title contender this year, that's also, you know, a lot of motivation too. When we're having this conversation next year, it'll be completely different because it'll be a whole new set of receivers. We'll be talking about Sterling Lockett going off for 1,000 yards this season. It's funny. We talk about Sterling Lockett. I think people forget that he's actually on the roster. But they're just so deep at receiver that I just don't. It's not gonna happen. But this is it. I mean, this is the last go around for these guys. I really do think that matters. You know, it's just different when it's that last year and you really want to go. Especially Cade Warner. Cade Warner's got so much pride. You know, and he's so proud of playing football and what he does. But he's a guy that's probably not gonna be playing football the next level. So you know that he probably knows this is his last year of football. And, I mean, you know, we saw what happened for players like Chris Sexton when they had moments like that.
Yep.
He went off last year.
Yes, he did, yeah.
You know, and so you see it from some guys like that. And, you know, I think you can see it. I'm not saying that Cade Warner's going to be Curry Sexton. Let's not get this twisted, okay? But I think that matters. I think it matters that all these guys are seniors and they know that this is it.
Yep, for sure. So, yeah, definitely we will see what we have in store for these receivers coming into 2022 season here, 49 days until kickoff against South Dakota. A lot more on these guys as the season gets started. Next week we'll be talking about the tight ends. Speaking of Sammy Wheeler, we'll be talking about more of him next week in the offensive line coming back for 2022 as well. So that's going to be on next week's edition of the podcast. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, the Pro Project Podcast, weekly edition episode 109. Real quick here, before we touch on men's basketball here, I wanted to get this in here. Track and field. Some of the K-State alum for track and field were competing a few weeks ago to try to get themselves qualified to compete in the World Championships, which started today in Eugene, Oregon. And one of those alums, Casey alums, has qualified for the finals. She will be going to the finals. I believe it's the hammer or the shot put. I cannot remember because I had to score her throw at one point and I lost it. But Jane Casanovid going to the finals. She will be competing on Sunday World Championships in Eugene. I wanted to mention that in here when this podcast comes out tomorrow. It will make total sense. But yes, I talked about her in a previous daily. She was competing as well. I think she came in second to qualify for the World Championships. So big shout out on the Pro Project Podcast to Jane Casanovid for making the finals in either the I'm sorry, I can't remember the event. Shame on me. Hammer throw or the shot put. I'm going to have to go back in. She did really well, actually. She finished, what I think, in the top four as well. So I definitely want to get a shout out on this podcast tonight. So a job well done to a K-State alum on the field, track and field side anyways, with Jane Casanovid making it to the finals in the World Championships. And I'll be paying attention to that as this weekend progresses as well. A lot of good stuff going on the track and on the field as well. I know the 100-meter sprint was pretty interesting as well. So a lot to come on that front as well. I'm looking forward to that as well. So definitely K-State, former K-State track and field, Jane Casanovid to the finals there on the field. She will compete on Sunday there as well. So with that transition, men's basketball. And we know who the first opponent is for K-State men's basketball, and Jerome Tang, Cal. I did not see this coming. So this happened yesterday. So K-State did sign a 2-game home-and-home schedule agreement with the Pac-12 of California yesterday. As well down here, the two schools will open the series in Berkeley at Haas Pavilion Friday, November 11th of this coming year. Yes, let me repeat that again, K-State Nation. This fall coming, K-State goes to Cal Friday, November 11th, 2022. And then, of course, the series will wrap up at Bramlage in two more years. That's going to be during the 2024-25 season. This thing is weird. I don't know why we got to wait, 3-4 freaking years to play a basketball team. I just don't know why. Sorry. Sorry. I just had to get that on my chest. I just had to get that on my chest there a little bit. But, yeah, I just don't understand it. I mean, I get the Wichita K-State. I understand that. I really like that. But to play a Pac-12 team this year and then have to wait 3 years, play them, I just don't understand that one bit, but whatever. So, yeah, K-State and Cal have met several. They have met a few times, actually. I was surprised on this. Going all the way back, not even to where we're both born, 1953, K-State holds a 6-1 advantage on the Cal Golden Bears. And then, of course, the Bears kind of looking down what I put down here, or what I read on KC Online, actually. This team finished with this kind of goes back to old discussions on this podcast about beating bad teams. This is one of them. Cal 12-20 last year, including a 5-15 record in Pac-12 play last year. Yeah, so Jalen King, but they do have several good players on this team, including junior guard Jalen Celestine. What's your last name? Sorry about that. Averaged 7.5 points a game. Then they get a senior back and a guard, Joe Brown, who averages only 5 points a game there. And then you have another senior in Kane. Wow, 4 points a game there. And then, of course, they also, like Case, they will welcome 4 other newcomers as well. And they also added in a transfer as well. And Devin Askew, that name should be familiar. Texas, So he transferred from over there. That's interesting. And you have Dejuan Clayton, who transferred from Hartford as well. Again, let me repeat that record from Cal last year, K-State Nation, 12-20, 5-15 in conference play. Man. So, but yeah, Jerome Tang, going to have your first road opponent, November 11th, Alex, against Cal to kick off this two-game series here. You have to wait a couple more years to play the one in Bramlage, but Jerome Tang gets a road test to begin his tenure here at K-State.
He does, and it's just that game is just 10 days before the Cayman Islands Classic as well, which is where they play Rhode Island 10 days after that. So they'll be on the road again for that half after, and then they'll be on the road again a week after the Cayman Islands Classic to go over to Hinkle Fieldhouse in Indianapolis to play the Butler Bulldogs.
So they
will be shaking and moving around, playing some games on the road early on in Jerome Tang's tenure. Again, and thinking, Eddie, I'm trying to think of if they played this many games away from Bramlage early on, where you've got a true road game at Cal in November, you've got a true road game at Butler in November.
Yep.
You go to the Cayman Islands for a tournament in November. That is a lot of travel, and in November.
And that, along with that, sorry to cut you off, coming in here hot. Also, add on the fact that you have all these new guys also as well. A lot of bonding time, folks.
It is, 100%. And you know what, I think it go a couple ways. You know, I think that, hey, you know, it may be a little rough early. In those games, but I think that prepares you. I think that prepares you for down the line. The more you go on the road, the more you're playing Power 5 competition, the more you're prepared for the Big 12 schedule that's going to be just grueling. And so I think it's a good pitch to California. They weren't great last year in basketball. I don't know how good they're supposed to be this year. But
I don't know either. I have no idea.
Typically better than the Pac-12 in basketball. Probably not pretty close. I would venture a guess, with limited knowledge on California, that K-State's probably going to have the better roster. I would guess. Again, I could be wrong because I'm not exactly sure on California's team.
Here in mid-July, we're guessing on predictions for this game.
Mid-July, I'm going to guess that when the Wildcats play them, in 5 months, that they will have the better roster. But I don't know. But look, those guys never played with each other. All right, those K-State players, let's be honest about it. So that's gonna be tough. I don't care if Cal's good or not. That's gonna be tough. That's gonna be a tough game for K-State. When you're trying to learn to play with all these new players, and you're going up against a Power 5 school on the road, traveling halfway across the country, that's hard. That's going to be hard. So Good point.
Yeah.
If that game was played December 11th instead of November 11th in Cal, I would feel a lot more confident in K-State's ability to go there and get a win. I think it's going to be tricky. I think it's going to be a tricky game. So we'll see what happens. But I'm eager about it, excited about it. And I really do like the way this non-conference is going. Because they really have opportunities, and we'll see the non-conference schedule soon. It will come out soon, the full schedule.
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
We'll break it down, obviously. but looking at it, you know, this is a schedule that's giving K-State opportunities to get some wins that could really catapult them. If it comes to the NCAA tournament and trying to become a tournament team, when you can go on the road and get a win on the road in the non-conference against Power 5 squad, that's something that helps you. Looking at a squad like Rhode Island and looking at some of the squads that are in the Cayman Islands Classic, you're going to have a chance to play three quality games there. You're going to go on the road against Butler on a game against the team in the Big East, which is a really good basketball conference, and again, get a win on the road. And then you're going to come home, and you're going to play Wichita State, another team that's obviously tough and difficult. Yep. You're going to have Nebraska in Kansas City. You're going to have Florida in Bramlage.
Yep.
So you're going to have these opportunities. But at the same time, Eddie, the reason I think this is perfect is because you're not getting a team like Illinois last year when they had to go to Kansas City and play Illinois or go play Arkansas. Like, they're not having to go play top 10 teams. Like, they're playing Power 5 teams that they can play competitive with. I think it would be a little overwhelming if they had to go play Arkansas in Fayetteville November 11th. They'd probably lose by 35 points. That would be ridiculous. That would be a near impossible task, in my opinion. You don't have to go do that this year. Cal's not Arkansas. Cal's not Illinois. You know, they're not those types of teams. And so you're not going to have to go do that. The Cayman Islands has good quality opponents, but they're not opponents that I don't think necessarily going to overwhelm K-State. Again, California, Power 5 school, you're going on the road, but they did have a losing record last year. Same thing with Butler. Wichita State, we know that they're a solid squad, but they're going to be coming to Bramlage, and that's going to be in December, by the time December rolls around. Nebraska, we know that they're okay, but they're, you know, K-State's playing them later in December, and they're also a squad that that is not one that will probably make the NCAA tournament. And then you look at Florida, who's probably a team that may make the NCAA tournament, but is a team that's probably not going to necessarily be like a top 10 team either. So I think it just plays out good for K-State to get some wins, to get some quality wins, and also play quality opponents while not just being overwhelmed by a grueling schedule. Because, look, you don't need to overwhelm yourself. You're going to be overwhelmed enough playing that Big 12 schedule. You're going to be overwhelmed enough when you got to go play number one Baylor and then number three Kansas, and then all of a sudden you're going to play number nine Texas Tech, and then you got to go play number three Kansas again. Next thing you know, you play four top 10 games in like a row. And like, you know, so you're going to play a grueling Big 12 schedule. But I really do like the way this kind of breaks out for them. I'm eager to see the whole thing. I'm eager to see this whole non-con schedule and kind of dissect it with you whenever it comes out here, which K-State says will be soon. They said it in the article that it will be soon. So, okay.
Okay.
Hold it to it, K-State.
Okay.
I'm eager to look at it and break it down. Because I think that once we have kind of the games around these others, I think we'll have a little bit of a better idea of kind of the way this non-conference schedule will break for them. It's still a little difficult not knowing some of those in-between games.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Presented by AutoFest 2022. We thank them for partnering up with us during their summer stretch as they get ready for their big event here in Westside Manhattan, Rally in the Valley in a couple weeks, August 6th. This is the Pearl Project Podcast, episode 109. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden. California finished 10th in the Pac-12 last year. The other two behind them that are worse than them, Utah and Oregon State. Yeah,
so
put that.
They only went three games. Oregon, right?
Yeah, Oregon State, yeah, they only won three games, and they only won one measly game in the conference.
What was their overall record, Eddie?
Oregon State, 3-28.
Yes. I don't know if I've ever heard of that. from a Power 5 school.
From a Power 5 school, which obviously with all this realignment talk going on for the future, whatnot, we'll see. But, Oregon State, 3-28. Damn.
Roll it.
Utah ain't that much better.
Like KU football at its peak downward spiral.
Yeah, that's worse than KU football. Yeah. Yeah. Utah 11-20 overall. They only won four games in the Pac-12 conference, and of course you have Cal right there. I'm pulling up at the same time just trying to see if I can pull up there. Yes, I can. Okay, so I'm looking down here. A lot of L's down here. Yeah, a lot of L's. Nothing that really strike me, but again, Alex, you hit on a couple of things as well. You mentioned that this is going to be the first game of the year, and K-State's going to have to iron some things out. You really touched on some really important nuggets there. This game was later. Yeah, I'll put this as an easy double. Well, it should be anyways, because we come on here basketball season lately the last couple of years, and Bruce Weber, you know, not winning games, you're supposed to be winning. But yeah, you have a lot of unknowns there, and I like how I'm glad you said that with the roster and whatnot there. I don't know how Cal's going. Cal, as I mentioned, there a few moments ago. Brought in a couple transfers, one from Texas and another one from Hartford there as well, to try to somewhat improve. So, yeah, I have no idea how Cal's going to look first game of the season against us. You got to go over there, Cal, West Coast trip. That's your neck of the woods. So, you plan on going to that game, or are you going to watch it?
Funny, I'll share this nugget with you. So you remember Coop. I don't know how many of y'all know who Coop is. Who's listening? Probably not. That's okay.
Yeah,
so, I remember him. Coop is my former college roommate, and he actually texted me a few weeks ago, and he was like, man, you know, he said, gosh, I hate that, like, you know, you're out there, and then I'm over here, and, like, we can't, like, hang. And he was like, gosh, he's like, we just need to get out to Berkeley, because his uncle lives in Berkeley. He's like, we just need to get out to Berkeley. And I'm like, yeah, man, I'm totally down for, like, a Berkeley trip. And then, like, 2 weeks later, it's like, K-State's going to Cal in Berkeley to play. So the next thing I know, Cooper will hit me up and be like, dude, let's go to Berkeley while K-State's playing Cal. So I have no idea if he'll shoot me that text. Hey, if he does, I'm game. Coop, if you're listening, I'm game. I'll probably be going to the Bay, actually, Eddie, a couple weeks before that. Because this game's November 11th. K-State. The Chiefs play the 49ers on October 23rd. And I do tentatively plan on going up, taking a little hour flight up to the Bay to watch the Chiefs 49ers up there. Yeah, so that is like 2.5 weeks before K-State plays Cal. So do I have two Northern California trips in me in a matter of 3 weeks? Why not, Eddie? Why not? YOLO. YOLO. YOLO live once. How many times has K-State come out here? Come out west. What? Actually, you know, I shouldn't say that. They'll probably come out here a lot because the Pac-12 is going to dissolve and we'll get all the Pac-12 schools. This will probably be a Big 12 matchup, Eddie, in 10 years.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking as well. The way I read a couple of articles this week about projected kind of divisions. So, yeah, this could be in the future.
I don't know, Eddie. Oh, gosh, do you think that they would be able to, like, lower themselves to, like, K-State standards? Like we're Cal Berkeley. Like, we can't snoop down to those, to the ag school in the middle of Kansas where you walk in and you walk out with a degree and a 2.0 GPA. Like, we can't do that. Like, does Cal have, do they have the kahunas to do that? Or are they going to just be like, you know what, we're too good for them. Like, we can't. I'm curious. I'm kind of curious how, if some Pac-12 schools are just going to be like, I'm too good. I'd rather not make any money. Whatever. We'll just, like, go independent because we've got a gazillion dollars because we've got a gazillion donors. Like, that's a side note, but I was wondering that when some people talk about Cal and Stanford. Like, we talk about the four schools, right? Arizona State, Utah, Colorado. I think they all would in that scenario. And I think eventually those four probably will. I could be wrong. I don't want to say they will for sure, but I think there's a better chance they do than they don't. But when you get to those West Coast schools, I'm kind of curious just what the attitude will be. But hey, if there does end up being like a merger type thing, this will be a Pac-12 game. And I'll be able to just go to, you know, go see K-State play all the time, Eddie. Especially if the Pac-12 adds San Diego State and then they merge, then it's a win-win-win. Everyone can come visit me out here in San Diego.
Yeah.
I really went in dreamland there, didn't I, for a minute?
You did. Yes, you did. And that's going to transition us into the red zone here on the Pearl Project Podcast here, folks, as we begin to close another jam-packed edition of the Wildcat, this Wildcat K-State Podcast here. Eddie Greer, Alex, I appreciate y'all for downloading, subscribing to the podcast. If you're not already, if you have not, we would like you to do that as well. There's so much content. There's been a good ton of content already in the past. Check out our archives of episodes already. If you have not already, I know we did two last week. If you have not downloaded, check those out. Do that as well. So there's a lot of good content coming. Obviously, we're waiting on, Alex mentioned, the men's rest of the schedule there. And also the K-State women's basketball team is also winning on their rest of the schedule as well. So there's that as well. I do also, speaking of women's basketball here, that's actually, I did not plan that, but that's a good transition real quick former K-State standout. She was in her early career at K-State when I was a senior, but Shaylin Martin, who I see quite a bit in running events here in Manhattan, Kansas, got nominated to go to the she entered into Salina Central Hall of Fame. Either was today or yesterday. I came across that on Mitch Fortner's Twitter feed there. I thought that was need to be mentioned on there as well. Shaylin Martin was on those K-State teams with Wiseman and a few others. Paige as well. I can't think of her first name right now. But yeah, I was a senior when she was a freshman and sophomore. So she definitely was one of those that really kind of the word of Alex Houston tonight, a Swiss Army knife. On the court for sure, and now she got elected to her high school Hall of Fame. So Shaylin Martin, congratulations! That's a big deal there, Salina Central. What did you say?
I just said woo woo.
Yeah.
I was making sound effects.
Yep, there you go. Well, gotta work on that a little bit.
Sorry, that was not a good one.
But anyways, yes, congratulations to Shaylin Martin. Thought I'd put that one in there in our episode tonight as well. Well, now, our Red Zone also going to Major League Baseball to wrap up this podcast, right? So there's two things. I got an announcement to make as well. So, but first, Major League Baseball, following this Dodgers game right now, 9-0. I just got a notification on my phone as we're wrapping up this podcast here that Clayton Kershaw is working on a perfect game against the Los Angeles Angels as I speak right now. So this is top of the 8th inning right now, and Dodgers just added another run. It's 9-0 there as well. But I wanted to talk about the rosters real quick. Obviously, Major League Baseball is at past their halfway point. But this is going to be their All-Star Weekend coming up next weekend there. And the rosters are already set out here. Yeah, already set out for both the AL and the NL, obviously, there as well. We have 5 players on the NL team going on. It should have been 6 because Austin Riley got left off the list. And he is tearing up opposing pitching. I just don't understand. Yes, I get it that making these stupid excuses that, you know, we got a lot of good third baseman, NL, whatever, but I think the national media has disrespected Austin Riley, not just this year, but even last year as well. Yes, I'm speaking as a Braves fan, so that's a disrespect, and he homered again tonight, which is number 26. He's on pace, possibly, Alex. You know, 40 home runs. Obviously, we went off to a slow start as a team, but that June month, we only lost, 5 times. That put us back in the race, and it's funny because I listened to episode 55, a Pro Project podcast, where we talked more about last year, getting ready for last year's football season with Deuce Vaughn, and then there was the whole Keon Mosey transfer thing. Yeah, I did listen to that. episode. Yes, I did. You can laugh. Go ahead and laugh at me. But
we were panicking. Yeah, were we panicking?
No, actually, we were not panicking.
Good for us.
We were not panicking. We were just kind of confused about Jarquidia Wright and why he didn't get much playing time and whatnot. Yeah, so we were
confusing. That was confusing. It's still confusing to this day to me.
Yeah, so, But yeah, then I said, we got to catch up to the Mets. We're 5 back. Year later, it's funny, because now we were trailing by 10.5 games beginning of June. Now, before we played the Mets this past weekend, or last weekend actually, it was down to 1.5 games. Now, obviously, we lost a series, 2-3, but we still have, 12 more games against them. And right off the bat, Alex, we played them 9 times in the month of August. So that could be decided right there in my mind. It's really right now Mets and Braves in the division. Everyone else right now is either 14 games up or no contest right now. But this is Major League Baseball right now, looking at this, is a more competitive division race here. Obviously, we're trying to get the 5 in a row different titles, obviously, but the Mets stand in the way, and obviously, they have improved, obviously. They're no joke this year, so we're going to have to work for it, obviously, but hey, we've made a big comeback from being 10.5 back to now it's 2, because they did not play tonight because of, I believe, weather, I think, was the way it got postponed. But yeah, I just want to get that out there as well here. Home Run Derby was announced as well. Two-time winner Pete Alonso trying to go for 3, and I knew this was going to happen. Guess who he's, take a wild guess who he's going up against in round 1.
Oh my gosh, Pete Alonso. Who could it be? Oh my gosh, I did not see at all the Home Run Derby participants either. Is it, I'm trying to think of a Brave who's going to be in the Home Run Derby. Eddie, I'm blanking. Save me, throw me a life raft. I'm blanking.
He's
going
to be Taeyeon.
Don't throw me a life raft. Let's see if I can dig out of the hole. What Brave would be in the Home Run Derby? Throw me the life raft.
You're blanking. Ronald Acuna Jr.
Acuna, okay. He was on the list, but I didn't know if he would have been the one.
Yep, so he's going to be playing him. So again, the whole Mets and Braves thing, to try to deny him.
It's annoying. Have fun against Pete Alonso, you know? Oh, my gosh. He went up against Salvi last year. It was so annoying. It was so annoying because Pete Alonso, he steps up to the plate. He's, you know, bopping the head. He's got the jam going. He's got the swag coming up to the plate. He just crushes all these home runs. And then Salvi comes up. And Salvi, I didn't even get to watch it because they're just talking about Pete Alonso the whole time. And Salvi has got like a little tiny like cutout in the screen, right, where they're just showing him swinging, but then they're like interviewing Pete Alonso. And Salvi's just like crushing it. He's doing great. And he didn't beat Pete Alonso because Pete Alonso just went nuclear. But Salvi had like an amazing round. He was like second or third in home runs, but he didn't advance because he was going up against Pete Alonso, and I didn't get to see like the whole thing. And everyone just talked about Pete Alonso, and it really ticked me off, Eddie. Really ticked me off. So hopefully that does not happen to Ronald Acuna, and he goes out and beats Pete Alonso. I'm sick of Pete Alonso. I'm sorry, Eddie. I'm just sick of him. I still got fit for that home run derby.
Going on Pete Alonso rant on the Pro Boxing Podcast.
I'm ranting about everything. Eddie, we'll see if you're saying the same thing. If you're trying to watch Acuna in a home run derby and you can't, and you're just listening to him talk about Pete Alonso.
Well, that does. And I will go on a rant on this podcast.
Yes, he will. You'll join me.
I will definitely go on a rant on this. But yes, the whole Mets and Braves thing, again, coming full circle, round 1, Pete Alonso, Ronald Acuna Jr., Corey Seager, and I can't remember his first name, but Rodriguez in the other half of that bracket. And on the other side, Kyle Schwarber, Albert Pujols is going to be going up in round 1. Interesting enough.
Interesting. is that just a like an honorary, like, hey, this is your last year?
I think I remember correctly on that. Albert wanted to do one last home run derby, so I think that's an honorary thing there as well there. And Juan Soto against Ramirez in the other half of the bracket. Juan Soto had another episode with Will Smith tonight. Not going to get in that. not going to go down that rabbit hole again. But yeah, Juan Soto and Ramirez in the other half of that back as well. So 8 players will be a part of that home run derby. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. We'll see what Ronald has in the tank for Pete.
I'm just sorry Ronald has to go against Pete. Pete is just the most annoying human being in home run derby history. I hope he has like no. You're on the timer now, so you don't just have like the 10 outs. I hope he doesn't get any off in the timer, and that little head beatbox thing he's got going on will go away real quick.
Well, that's annoying. Don't get me started. That is annoying.
Oh my gosh, because he's just standing there, and like, I'm just trying to watch Salvi, and like, he just hits all these home runs. I just see him just like this music playing, and instead of watching Salvi at home runs, I just get to watch Tito Lawson just beat off his head. And I, oh my gosh, oh, he drove me crazy. Why are you bringing this back up for me? I will say this though. Rodriguez had a great year for Seattle, and that was well earned home run derby for him against Corey Seager. Look, I will be in the Acuna fan. I will 100% be in the Acuna fan for the home run derby. I'm here for that. And Jose Ramirez against Juan Soto, I think that's an underrated matchup.
Yeah, I think so as well. Yeah,
Juan Soto is. Judd, he was one of the really, he was on the short list for MVP list last year. I mean, the Nationals weren't good, but
they're not good right now either.
And they're not good right now, but he is a beast. Like, that's how good he is, the fact that he was even just considered in the MVP discussion. Or maybe that was 2 years ago. Was it 2 years ago? Because I think Tatis was in that too. And Tatis was hurt last year, so it might have been 2 years ago. The point being, he was in the MVP discussion within the last couple of years. And he's a really good player. And Jose Ramirez is somebody who has watched plenty of Jose Ramirez, too much of Jose Ramirez, to be 100% honest with you. He is wildly annoying to watch because he is always dreading the Royals. He's just hitting dingers off of them left and right. It's so annoying to watch him hit. I felt the same way about a couple other Cleveland players, but he is definitely the one now. So Jose Ramirez is really underrated. That's really the story of that. So those are two underrated players. They don't get a ton of play, but they're really good. So I think that's going to be a really good matchup. That's my matchup to watch. If anybody wants my matchup to watch in the Home Run Derby, I'll pick that one. Schwarber's just going to, no offense to Albert, but Schwarber's gonna take that one. I'm pretty confident. But look, I'll take Acuna in the upset. Give me Acuna in the upset. But look, this Pete Alonso thing's gotta end at some point. This can't continue forever.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll definitely love to see that. Yeah, definitely the way once again, the whole. Oh, and I just got a notification before I finish that thought. The perfect game is a wrap. Angels got a hit off of Clayton Kershaw, so no perfect game in this one. Of Clayton Kershaw, but the Angels still have not scored a run. So I wanted to break that in here. Breaking news from the Pearl Project Podcast, baseball edition.
Kershaw will survive. He's pitched a perfect game before.
Yes, he has. He's been close multiple times.
Close multiple times, and hasn't he gotten multiple no-hitters? I feel like he's gotten at least two. I know he's gotten one. I know that's a fact.
I gotta go back and look and check that on that. You might be right on that. But back to the whole Pete Alonso thing. Yeah, with the whole I'm not speaking correctly, but the Mets and Braves, the way that things are shaking up now, this could go down the wire, but again, I think whole division could be up for grabs. I think this whole turn of the division will be 4 games in 5 days. I think it's 5 games in 4 days in New York. That is going to decide the division, I think, in my opinion, right there. But yeah, I'll definitely love to see Ronald light it up against Pete Alonso and knock him out. So that'll be a delight for Braves fans everywhere, for Braves country for sure. So. Yeah, that's my intake on that.
Also, I do think the Braves will win that division. Look, the Mets did this last year, right? They started hot. They had the whole thing going with DeGrom. He was unhittable. Had the ERA of like 0.00001.
Something
like that. And he was just unhittable. The second half, it just fell out. And remember, they had a big lead on the Braves, and it almost disappeared. I don't think that there's anything. I think that the Braves and Dodgers are the two best teams in the National League, and I think that's the way it's going to play out. I stand by that. I think that they are. I think that is the way things will shake out. I think it's going to come down to to those two squads, which is fitting enough. Where did Freddie Freeman go? Who does Nathan want him to be with? We don't know, Eddie. We don't know.
Don't get me started on. Don't do it. Don't do it. It's late. Don't do it. Oh man, that whole
situation. We haven't talked about that, Eddie. I had to drop it, Doug.
I knew you were gonna go there with that one.
Reunion game with a twist at the end. Oh my gosh, that's insane.
Yeah.
But I do think they'll win the division. The Braves. I do think it'll come down to those two teams. This is my thought, but you're right, Eddie. It's going to come down to that little pairing. They still got to have any games against each other. That's what it's going to come down to. It's going to come down to that little period of time that you mentioned, where they got the little 9-game swing. And I will say this, Eddie. If we are wanting to rewind on podcasts and listen to what people said, I do remember a month or two ago we were on here. The Braves were in Colorado playing the Rockies, and you were not happy with them. You came on the podcast, and you talked about not being very happy with them, and how they had like won more than like three games, and you were like, and it was like scoreless in the ninth in Colorado, and you're like, you can't beat this Colorado team, and you have like won more than three games this season. Like this team, and I said, Eddie, they did it last year. You're like, not like this. I'm like. Well, they did. Look, they're digging. They're
like
18 games over 500 now.
Yep,
so.
They sure are, yeah.
But they don't have Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, we don't, but Matt Olson is trending in the right direction, man.
No, Matt
Olson's
a health player.
Yeah, into the ninth game, and I'll get to my announcement here. Matt Olson, prior to tonight's game with Washington, who had hit a homer in the last three games, did not homer tonight, but he had three hits in the game. So
he's really, really good.
He's
tearing
it up.
Watch him play in Oakland a lot.
And hopefully we'll see more of him do the same damage in the second half. Hopefully he hit up some more, for sure, along with Austin Riley continues to rank. I tell you, man. Good thing could be on the horizon once again, but we'll have to see. But yeah, I think the Mets definitely stand our way. I do think, in my opinion, they're better because of Buck Showalter taking over that team, some stability over there. But we got our work cut out for us. But I feel really good. So we'll see what happens.
Eddie, I don't know if Freddie Freeman can handle an NLCS against the Braves. I don't know if he can do it. I Freddie Freeman would be so convinced. He would be so torn, Eddie. He would be so torn.
Oh man, I could do a whole podcast on Freddie Freeman. Yes, I can. Oh.
I don't know if you saw his agent is suing.
Yeah.
Doug Gottlieb.
Yep, Doug Gottlieb. Yep. Yeah, I did read that.
I saw that yesterday.
Yep, Doug Gottlieb. He should stay your butt in college basketball.
Do you remember when Casey? He was trying to talk himself into the K-State basketball job when they hired Bruce Weber.
Yep. I remember that. Yeah. Like what?
Life comes into full circle, doesn't it? Oh my god.
Yeah, Doug Gottlieb. Keep your mouth shut. Yeah. Whatever. Anyway.
I'm glad you went there for the red zone tonight. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Announcement. Okay, so I've been thinking about this for quite a while. As of this weekend, and beginning Monday, and I haven't been doing this, obviously, because me and you both have Twitter handles, obviously. But, hopefully, with our DM being open, fans who listen to this podcast, K-State fans who listen to the Pro Project podcast, can ask us questions, can DM us questions throughout the rest of the month. And I think my vision for this is to have a questions episode once a month starting in August. So that's kind of what I'm thinking towards that. So definitely, if you've been listening, a loyal listener to this podcast, you can shoot a direct message. You can inbox me at Eddie_3G. And then, Alex, what is your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is @AFACHTS. That is indeed the Twitter. There are two Twitters for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, two.
There are two. One is the Alex underscore ITRC one is my work one. The AFACHTEN one is my personal one. But honestly, both DMs are open, so it doesn't really matter which one you slide into. You can honestly, if you just literally just Google my name, my Twitter handles are like one of the first things to come up. Not that I've ever Googled myself before. but they are. But no, on Twitter, AFACHTEN would be the personal Twitter handle.
All right, yeah, we'll be sending reminders every week on the podcast as well, and that is kind of my vision for that, to do that podcast episode on the first week of each month. That is what I'm going for, along with the recap episode of the football season, so once we get into that as well. So that is a vision for that as well. So you have a question, or kind of going back to, again, going back a little bit, Haven't re-listened to this yet, but episode 67 of the podcast, or you can tweet at us. Alex's tweet, somebody tweeted at Adam, and we talked about that for a little bit. So, yeah, tweet, you want to get off the chest, you tweet one of us about that as well. So, definitely, if you've been a loyal listener for a while, or you just got started, definitely you have a question for either one of us. Definitely, we'll be marketing that on social media as well. So, if you have a question for us, you could be on the show. Your question will be on the show, or your tweet could be on the show.
That's right. Yeah, you could be on the show. You can be featured, and you can hear our take. You could look, if you ask Eddie for his thoughts on Freddie Freeman, he'll have to answer it.
Yes, I'll have to answer it. Yeah.
You won't have a choice. You won't be like, we got to save that for another podcast. Something like that. He'll answer it. And if you bring up Will Howard, he'll have to talk about Will Howard.
Right off the bat tonight, Will Howard.
You've got to answer the questions.
I got to do this for the listeners. It's for the listeners, yeah, folks.
For the listeners, because that's right. We're here for the listeners, Eddie. So we got to answer whatever they want to know.
Yeah, so that is breaking announcement on the podcast. Once again, adding a little bit of layer to this K-State podcast. They will have a questions podcast once a month. So definitely starting next month as we get closer to fall camp for K-State football. You have a question or a thought, you tweeted us or DM us as well. And your question or response could be on that episode. So I'm looking forward to that as well. We'll continue to market that towards the end of the month. Alex, last thoughts on a pretty much packed episode of the episode 109 of the podcast.
Yeah, you know, Eddie, I would just tell people out there in the last thought, go check out everything for Big 12 Media Day. So I definitely encourage it. If you haven't listened to Brent Yormark's press conference, go check it out. It was really, really insightful. Gene talked, and if you're curious about that, Gene talked on the KC Sports Network. So I didn't see him actually have a press conference anywhere, like most others did, but he sat down and chatted with, who was it with KC Sports Network? Was it Derek and Cole? I want to say it was Derek and Cole. So he chatted with them. Very interesting interview, and so you can check that out. Or maybe it was just Cole. I don't know who it was. But it was with KC Sports Network, so I saw him there. There was also an Ask an AD that came out right before Big 12 Media Days as well, where he sat down with Brian Smoller for about 15 minutes to talk about realignment and some of the things that were going on, some of those capital projects. And so that's also a good lesson, so I definitely encourage you to find that. You can find that on K-State Sports YouTube. Just hear the players have to say. You know, the players, like I said, when you listen to these players, Eddie, these coaches, they're really confident. I think that really kind of permeates throughout. Chris Klieman said, you know, he was asked, "What's your best team at K-State?" He said, right now, he said, "I don't, we haven't started fall practice yet, so, you know," he said, "attrition is the key." He said, "So I don't want to, say that this is the best team because we don't know what's going to happen with injuries, but right now it is." Which I think kind of highlights what we were saying about the depth, the fact that he's saying, "Oh, right now it is, but let's see if we get hurt, I don't know." So, he openly admitted, yeah, this is my best team at the moment, currently constructed 85 players. So, there's definitely some confidence within the Veneer Sports Complex that this is a team that can do some damage. And look, we had Anthony Frias on, or he had to say, Keith's been around some of the guys, he had to say,
yep.
These players are piping with confidence, like, you know, they got a lot of it. So just go check that stuff out, and then enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the weekend. I know it's like 800 degrees up there, but enjoy it, and do it somewhere where you can, because it's going to be gone before you know it. It is flying by.
Yes, it is. Big thanks to Rally in the Valley Auto Fest 2022. The people, the men and women that are putting that event on west side of Manhattan, Kansas. And those of you wondering where it's going to take place at, the Midwest Car Collection building outside parking lot is where it's all going to be taking place. Everything will start at 8 with the registration. Again, there's all the information is on a different daily titled Rally in the Valley. Make sure you guys go download and check it out for more information on that as well. Probably end up saying it again on next week's edition of the podcast as it gets even closer and closer. On that note, folks, episode 109 of the Pro Product Podcast in the books. It's been a good one. It's been another good one here as the summer rolls along. Alex, a big thanks to Alex and Eddie Greer. Enjoy the weekend, the third weekend in July. We'll be back here next week. Alex, we'll do this again next week, sir.
Sounds good. I look forward to it, Eddie.
On another episode of the Purple Project Podcast.
Make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll catch y'all on the next episode. Thank you for listening. Go Cats!